Elena Petrovna von Gahn, more popularly known as Madame Blavatska or HPB, came from a noble family in Ukraine. Her father, Peter von Gahn, was a descendant of German nobility, while her mother, Elena Andreevna Gahn, came from one of the oldest families of Russian nobility and was also a celebrated novelist. As a child, she would often have visions and displayed clairvoyance as well as other metaphysical phenomena. Years later, she traveled throughout Europe and the Middle East, studying under various teachers and Sufi saints. She met her teacher, an Indian yogi named Master Moriya, in London, who later directed her to go to New York in the United States. Once there, she founded the Theosophical Society. In 1885, she started to write The Secret Doctrine, which was finally published 3 years later in 1888. The Secret Doctrine has been acknowledged by many as one of the most remarkable books in the world. It is considered to be the Bible of Theosophy, a source book of the esoteric tradition that outlines the fundamental tenets of the Secret Doctrine of the past ages. Published as two volumes during her lifetime, The Cosmogenesis and Anthropogenesis, The Secret Doctrine explains the origin and evolution of the universe and of humanity through an account of root races dating back millions of years. Although the writer of The Secret Doctrine, Madame Blavatska, often expressed that she was only the compiler of ancient wisdom that was passed on to her, the true authors of the work were her teachers, the Mahatmas, or great souls who were the guardians of the secret wisdom of the ages. Today on Between Master and Disciples, we invite you to listen to excerpts from The Secret Doctrine.
It is the spiritual evolution of the inner immortal man that forms the fundamental tenet in the occult sciences. To realize even distantly such a process, the student has to believe in the one universal life, independent of matter, what science regards as matter, and in the individual intelligences that animate the various manifestations of this principle. The one life is closely related to the one law which governs the world of being, karma. Exoterically, this is simply and literally action, or rather an effect-producing cause.
Esoterically, it is quite a different thing in its far-fetching moral effects. It is the unerring law of retribution. No theological definition of a personal deity can give an idea of this impersonal, yet ever-present and active principle. Nor can it be called providence. It was shown that at the first flutter of renascent life, Svabhavat, the mutable radiance of the immutable darkness, unconscious in eternity, passes at every new rebirth of cosmos from an inactive state into one of intense activity, that it differentiates, and then begins its work through that differentiation. This work is karma, or retribution.
The cycles are also subservient to the effects produced by this activity. The one cosmic atom becomes seven atoms on the plane of matter, and each is transformed into a center of energy. That same atom becomes seven rays on the plane of spirit, and the seven creative forces of nature, radiating from the root essence, follow. One the right, the other the left path, separate till the end of the kalpa or age, and yet are in close embrace. What unites them? Karma or retribution?
The atoms emanated from the central point emanate in their turn new centers of energy, which, under the potential breath of Fohat, or dynamic energy of cosmic ideation, begin their work from within, without, and multiply other minor centers. These, in the course of evolution and involution, form in their turn the roots or developing causes of new effects, from worlds and man-bearing globes, down to the genera, species, and classes of all the seven kingdoms, of which we know only four. For the blessed workers have received the Thian Kham, the power or knowledge of guiding the impulses of cosmic energy in the right direction. In the Eternity, or Book of the Aphorisms of Tsongkhapa, Dhyankam is the power or knowledge of guiding the impulses of cosmic energy in the right direction.
The true Buddhist, recognizing no personal God nor any Father and Creator of heaven and earth, still believes in an absolute consciousness, Adibuddhi. And the Buddhist philosopher knows that there are planetary spirits, the Dian Chohans. But though he admits of spiritual lives, yet as they are temporary in eternity, even they, according to his philosophy, are the Maya of the day, the illusion of a day of Brahma, a short manvantara, or an active period of the universe of 4,320 billion years. The Yin Sin is not for the speculations of men, for the Lord Buddha has strongly prohibited all such inquiry.
If the Dian Chohans, or planetary spirits, and all the invisible beings, the seven centers and their direct emanations, the minor centers of energy, are the direct reflex of the one light, yet men are far removed from these, since the whole of the visible cosmos consists of self-produced beings, the creatures of karma, thus regarding a personal God as only a gigantic shadow thrown upon the void of space by the imagination of ignorant men. They teach that only two things are objectively eternal, namely akasa, or ether, and nirvana, eternal bliss, and that these are one in reality and but a maya when divided. Everything has come out of akasa, or svabhavat, on our earth, in obedience to a law of motion inherent in it, and after a certain existence passes away. Nothing ever came out of nothing. Buddhist Catechism.
If a Vedantic Brahmin of the Advaita sect, when asked whether he believes in the existence of God, is always likely to answer, as Jacoliot was answered, "I am myself God," a Buddhist would simply laugh in the same reply, "There is no God, no creation." Yet the root philosophy of both Advaita and Buddhist scholars is identical, and both have the same respect for animal life, for both believe that every creature on earth, however small and humble, is an immortal portion of the immortal matter, for matter with them has quite another significance than it has with either Christian or materialist, and that every creature is subject to karma or retribution.
The answer of the Brahmin is one which would suggest itself to every ancient philosopher, Kabbalist, and Gnostic of early days. It contains the very spirit of the Delphic and Kabbalistic commandments, for esoteric philosophy solved ages ago the problem of what man was, is, and will be, of man's origin, life cycle, interminable in its duration of successive incarnations or rebirths, and finally of his absorption into the source from which he started.
But it is not physical science that we can ever ask to read man for us, as the riddle of the past or that of the future, since no philosopher is able to tell us even what man is, as he is known both to physiology and psychology. In doubt whether man was a god or beast, he is now connected with the latter and derived from an animal. No doubt that the care of analyzing and classifying the human being as a terrestrial animal may be left to science, which occultists of all men regard with veneration and respect. They recognize its ground and the wonderful work done by it, the progress achieved in physiology and even to a degree in biology.
But man's inner spiritual, psychic, and even moral nature cannot be left to the tender mercies of an ingrained materialism. For not even the higher psychological philosophy of the West is able, in its present incompleteness and tendency towards a decided agnosticism, to do justice to the inner, especially to his higher capacities and perceptions, and those states of consciousness across the road to which such authorities as Mill draw a strong line, saying, "So far and no farther shalt thou go." No occultist would deny that man, no less than the elephant and the microbe, the crocodile and the lizard, the blade of grass or the crystal, is, in his physical formation, the simple product of the evolutionary forces of nature through a numberless series of transformations. But he puts the case differently.
To make the working of karma or retribution in the periodical renovations of the universe more evident and intelligible to the student when he arrives at the origin and evolution of man, he has now to examine with us the esoteric bearing of the karmic cycles upon universal ethics. The question is, do those mysterious divisions of time called yugas and kalpas by the Hindus and cycle, ring or circle by the Greeks have any bearing upon or any direct connection with human life? Even exoteric philosophy explains that these perpetual circles of time are ever intelligently in space and eternity. There are cycles of matter and there are cycles of spiritual evolution. Racial, national, and individual cycles. May not esoteric speculation allow us a still deeper insight into the workings of these?
This idea is beautifully expressed in a very clever scientific work. The possibility of rising to a comprehension of a system of coordination so far outreaching in time and space all reach of human observations is a circumstance which signalizes the power of man to transcend the limitations of changing and inconsistent matter and assert his superiority over all unstable and perishable forms of being. There is a method in the succession of events and in the relation of coexistent things which the mind of man seizes hold of, and by means of this as a clue he runs back or forward over aeons of material history of which human experience can never testify.
Events germinate and unfold. They have a past which is connected with their present, and we feel a well-justified confidence that a future is appointed which will be similarly connected with the present and the past. This continuity and unity of history repeats themselves before our eyes in all conceivable stages of progress. The phenomena furnish us the grounds for the generalization of two laws which are truly principles of scientific divination, by which alone the human mind penetrates the sealed records of the past and the unopened pages of the future. The first of these is the law of evolution, or to phrase it for our purpose, the law of correlated successiveness or organized history in the individual, illustrated in the changing phases of every single maturing system of results.
These thoughts summon into our immediate presence the measureless past and the measureless future of material history. They seem almost to open vistas through infinity and to endow the human intellect with an existence and a vision exempt from the limitations of time and space and finite causation, and lift it up toward a sublime apprehension of the supreme intelligence whose dwelling place is eternity. Thank you, harmonious viewers, for your company for today's episode of Between Master and Disciples. Join us again tomorrow for part two of From the Secret Doctrine, Cosmogenesis, Cyclic Evolution, and Karma. For now, please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television for Planet Earth, our loving home. Coming up next, right after noteworthy news, we wish you abundant blessings and love from God.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/BMD.